This is an ABC podcast.
This is Neat and Footy.
It's Sam and T Summer Sit Downs
on ABC Radio Australia.
Malola Lee and welcome to Sam and T's Summer Sit Downs. This is the place where we sit down with a Neesian footy player and get to know their story through family and footy, and we'll have some fun too. They've got control over the speaker as well, so expect a few songs to soundtrack the chat. My name is Sam Wykes, and with me each week is my Cook Island Koi, Tinidao Arona T.
Kia ora, Sammy. Jeez, I've been loving this summer series. We've had plenty of great chats so far with Will Hopoate, Mal Kawa and Joe Ngolavel, and much, much more. You can catch up with them too if you missed it via the Neesian Footy Podcast or the ABC Pacific website. Sammy, whose story are we diving into today?
Well, T, today we have one of the best Wallaroos on the show, and it's crazy to think that 5 years ago she had never played the game of rugby union. Born in New Zealand and now based in Canberra, playing for the Brumbies, and she teaches down there for work. She's Samoan and Tongan, more Tongan, I think, than Samoan. No, I'm joking. Sure? No, I've already started it. But we welcome to the show, Sio Kapesi Palu. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
No, thank you for having me. I'm really excited.
Sorry to already start the rivalry straight off the bat, but we'll go into a bit of your family. Your village is from Samoa and Tonga. Whereabouts are they?
Yes, so mum's Samoan, dad's Tongan. Mum's Samoan from Lotofanga Aleipata. Dad's Tongan from Tokomololo and Nautoka.
All right, I'll get straight to it. Yeah. Are you closer to one nation than the other?
I always explain myself, I am so well balanced. Like, I am so culturally connected to both of them. I actually understand the languages very fluently. I just can't really speak it, but if you sent me to the islands, I'll survive.
And was that part of your mum and dad getting that balance right throughout your upbringing?
100%, like first generation here, our parents spoke to us in our native tongue. We attended church and it was a Tongan speaking ward all our lives pretty much, but we were very connected to my mum's parents, and so like family wise we were around our Samoan culture, so we were very lucky. We had like the best of both worlds growing up.
And you're born in New Zealand. Can you tell us a little bit about your upbringing?
Yeah, born in Wellington, and grew up with a lot of my mum's family, hence the Samoan connection. Grew up a little bit in Wellington, but then moved to Auckland, South Auckland, Otara, and went to my first 2 years of primary school there. And at the young age of 8, my parents, I guess like a lot of Polynesians, moved to Australia for a better future. And since then, like, I consider myself Australian.
What was that move like as a young kid, just probably 8 years old, playing around, school friends? What was that like when they told you the news that the family's moving to Australia?
Probably like a lot of islanders at a young age, you don't have a say in anything, so it's not like you had the opportunity to speak about it.
Have a voice.
Literally, it was just we're moving and we're leaving, and so we did exactly that. And me and my sister joke around about it. We went to school for the first time. We both had – I have a sister who's 1 year younger than me. We both had matching Barbie tracksuits, and then we had these bright-as orange Finding Nemo shoes that we both wore. And we went to our first day of primary school. All the kids looked at us and had a very good laugh at us, and I was like, yep, we're going to be in for a long run.
Thanks, Mum and Dad. Whereabouts in Australia did you move to from New Zealand?
We moved to Sydney, and then pretty much our whole lives lived in like a little suburb called Hillsdale, like near Matraville. So we grew up there our whole lives, and then I moved to Canberra in 2019, and that's when I first picked up footy.
When you moved to Sydney, was there a Pacific community that you and your family connected to?
Most of it was just through church. In that area, you didn't find many islanders growing up. And I went to South Sydney High School, so just a public school in Maroubra. And there was like Matraville Sports High School where like all the islanders were. And I remember like in year six, I'm like, oh, I'm definitely going to go to Matto. And my parents are like, yeah, you're definitely not. And so I ended up at like South Sydney High with probably a more different and probably a more diverse cohort, just away from the Pacifica community. But, yeah, probably not as much, but definitely cultural connections through, like, sporting and stuff.
So you would have went to school with Tiana Penatani at South Sydney High?
Yeah. Yep, so she was in the year above me.
Okay.
And we grew up playing like Oztag and netball growing up.
Yeah, right. Okay, so that, yeah, that Mascot, Matraville area, there's a massive Tongan community there. The church group, was your family, you know, affiliated with that church group in Mascot and Matraville?
My parents were Mormon, and so there's like a Mormon church in the East Lake area, so not too far. But growing up, like I said, whatever Pacifica cohort there is, you would just try and gravitate towards them. And so we grew up with a lot of like Tongans in that Wesleyana church nearby.
I know all the leagueies went to Matchfield Sports High, a few of the boys that I played footy with. They got some good stories about that school. You mentioned you're well-balanced between Samoa and Tonga, your Samoan and Tongan culture, but then also Australia's home for you now. How did you juggle between the three of them growing up and learning all three cultures?
Don't get me wrong, like when we were younger, I feel like every other Polynesian might be in the same boat, but you grow up and you're probably like, oh, I don't want to learn it. Or you're kind of like Lokbisi in some ways, like, nah, I want to be more white. And I'm like, it's probably that traumatic experience that we had when me and my sister got mocked when we were younger. But it wasn't until we started visiting the islands like Samoa and Tonga at like the age of 16, and you like hear everyone speak the language and they don't speak English, and it was really hard to understand them and like banter with them. And so then that was something that triggered both me and my sister. We're like, nah, I want to have a joke, like I want to laugh. And so as we got older and a little bit more wiser, you start to embrace it and you're like, nah, like this is me, like this is my identity. Again, like it wasn't until you get a little bit older where you start to appreciate like this is my point of difference to that person, and what we have is so beautiful, and probably a bit of bias in there because that's who I am. But you start to see and differentiate yourself to others. You're like, no, we've got something special, and like I want to embrace that.
Having the best of both worlds, what's some of the best traits you take from both sides?
Sorry.
Why did you hesitate?
It's so different, and I think the people are so different in their own way, but they're just guided by God. And like if God is the center of their lives, you just know that they like have good standards towards them, like and they live by. In the Tongan culture, I genuinely love that they're just such giving people. Like they're so selfless, and I just look at my dad, he's Tongan, and he's a very selfless man. And sometimes it annoys me, but I'm like, yeah, all good. You're just being selfless, service. And then I look at like my mom's side, they're really big on like cultural practices. And I think I like that because whatever they do, like they stay true to it. And so sometimes it annoys me because like you have like whālawe lovers and things like that, but you have to try and embrace and look at the positives that both cultures bring.
You, I think one thing our Pacific culture does all have in common is, you know, our faith in God, and God's at the center. Even last night I was at mum and dad's house, and my kids were getting a growling because they haven't been back to church in a while. So it is common across.
That's you as well, getting the growling with them.
Oh, they didn't even bother growling me anymore. But you mentioned you went to the islands. What was the reason for them visits?
We always go back to the islands to visit family. So, like, both my parents have siblings there, and my mum's mum is currently still alive and she lives in the islands. And so we go back there just to visit them. But also, like, that's just our way of, like, grounding ourselves again. Like, I complain about so much here, and then I go back, I'm like, oh, nah, like, I really need to shut up, like, they've got it so much harder here, and I'm blessed with the life that I have now. But it's just grounding because I'm like, hey, these are like my roots. This is where I originate from. Like, this is my ancestors. My parents are literally born and raised. And it's nice to just go and learn their upbringing, because our upbringing is so different to how they would have had it. And so it's just nice to just go acknowledge that piece of it.
Did you have that same feeling when you were younger as well, that you had an appreciation, or when you were younger and going over there, was it hard to sort of understand like the island way of life compared to, you know, accustoming to where you are now in Australia?
100%. When I was younger, you obviously probably don't have the wisdom that you would now that you're older. You just go back just then, and probably as a bratty kid, you just laugh at the kids that don't speak English, and you're just like, nah, they're laughing at me because I can't speak Tongan or Samoan. And so you just go there and just like actually enjoy and just act like a kid, you know. They make anything out of nothing. I remember giggling because we went to have Milo one night and my auntie put the Milo packet in the kettle and like boiled Milo in the actual kettle, and I was like, nah. I was like, I don't think that's how you do it. But just little things, you look back and I'm like, okay, maybe that's how they do it. Yeah.
All right, was that the Tongan side or the Samoan side?
It was both. Definitely both.
I won't say anything. I get a call from a parent.
Well, we, me and Sam, we're only having this discussion this morning about the healthy rivalry between the Samoans and the Tongans communities. And, you know, we've seen recently the rugby league success that they've had at the international level with the Tor Samoa and the Tongans being, you know, making the final in the Pacific Championships Cup recently. With your mum and dad and, you know, both coming from each culture, is there like that bit of banter or the difference between the two? Yeah, you know, does one ever tease the other culture? I'm just trying to make sure I get the wording right. I know, I'm sure you understand what I'm trying to get to. But yeah, do they have them differences at time?
Oh, 100%, all the time. And I don't know if it's cultural or it's like personal towards each other's families, but it's definitely there. Especially when footy comes on, mum always has something to say about Tongan, like the Matemadonna team, and dad's like, don't worry about us, like, you know. And the dad would just boast about the, you know, like the league team as opposed to the union team. So they just jump ship, they just jump on whichever team is winning in that respective sport at the moment. But there's always a lot of banter. Even like the island itself, like Tongan Samoa, mum always has something to say because Samoa is just so beautiful, like just the landscape of it all. And dad probably just sits in the back seat like, yeah, okay, I'll take that.
Yeah. To be honest, I'll attest to that. I reckon Samoa is one of the most beautiful countries in the world, just the landscape, the water, just the...
Hey, you haven't been to Cook Island yet,
I haven't,
mate,
been there yet. I'm keen to go to Atatuki.
Who's got the biggest family, mum's side or dad's side?
Dad.
The Tongan side.
Dad's got more. Dad's got 11. There's 11 of them, and mum's is... Oh, there's 10 of them, so still respectively big.
Did you say...
But yeah, dad's got a much, much bigger family.
You said dad's got 11 siblings and mum's got 10 siblings. So you must have 1,000 cousins.
Yes, plenty.
I saw that you're engaged, but have you had your wedding yet?
No, I'm married.
Oh, you are married. Yeah, married now. So well, can,
yes,
I just,
yes.
Can I just ask, what was the wedding like in terms of the invites? You would have had to fill out the stadium, surely.
No, so that's when I became part of my parents' bad book because I didn't invite the extended group.
I feel you. I did the same thing.
Me and my husband had a very intimate, and it worked. We looked back and we're like, we don't have any regrets whatsoever. And I think my parents just started to understand, like, you don't always have to. We're really big on just having people we genuinely would speak to on a wedding day. And, like, we could go around that whole day and just speak to everyone and have meaningful conversations because we knew who they were. And so, yeah, we had a very intimate, smaller wedding.
Yeah, I think that's one thing we need to – I wouldn't say we need to shift, but that mindset around the quality of that wedding. Now, I know I've been to a number of weddings now, and I felt like each wedding is about the audience and it's never about the bride and groom. I can speak to from my own experiences. Well, me and my wife got married in England, and it was probably 8 people there, and it was during COVID. So we tactically had a wedding during COVID where the family joined though via Zoom.
Yeah, wow. No one can complain because that's how it was.
But it was the best day of our lives, and we got to save a lot of money. And what nationality is your husband?
He's Tongan.
Oh, so he went with the Tongan side.
Okay,
yes,
so
yes.
I'm thinking, so your dad married a Samoan, so there'll be nothing there about being related at all, maybe. Correct me if I'm wrong, unless there's something else there missing. But how did you go, you know, making sure there was at least third or fourth cousin that was play on?
I think... And as long as you're on opposite end of the island, you're okay. I'm like on east side and he's like from the west. And back in those days, I think it's hard to commute that way. So
yeah, there was no phones back in them days.
No one was traveling. Yeah, fair enough.
With your husband, was your dad happy that you married a Tongan man?
I think so. I think generally just carrying culture, and you're like-minded people, right? Mm. So, you know, if dad wanted something, it's probably easy for him to be like, oh, yeah, he's probably scared of my dad. But then it's different if it was like a more English person. It's hard for them to find like common ground. And so I think it was just the easier way to connect. But probably the same very reason, they'll probably have arguments.
Oh, man, it's just made me started laughing because I remember ringing my father-in-law, not my father-in-law at the time, because I was living in Perth. We're doing long distance and, you know, it'd be like you can't move in unless you get married. And that was the case. But I wanted to buck the trend and say, can she come over and move to Perth without being married? I rang him. He goes, nope, don't think that's a good idea. Then I was like, all right. Oh, man, my heart sunk. I thought, yeah, nah, yeah, I'll be able to get her over. Nah, it didn't happen. That's why I got married 2 weeks later. But for yourself and your husband and the whole Tongan household at the moment, like how big is cultural practices within your family knowing now you've married a Tongan?
It's huge. It's, again, acknowledging that piece. There are some parts of it that you probably disagree with, but it's like that's culture. Again, that's what makes you different from everyone else. So practice it. Like I say, we're such a small little island. We can easily be drowned out by, you know, the Western society. So I think it's really important to just to make sure you stay grounded. Practice like speaking the language all the time. My husband's fluent in Tongan, like very fluent. And so it's about utilizing whatever resource you have, encouraging your parents to speak the language. Like when kids come in the picture, you just want to be able to carry as much as you can.
I felt like you just spoke to me and Sammy then, and we're just there nodding our heads. Yes, we need to do more.
I need to do more. Absolutely need to do more.
Well, you're listening to Sam and T Summer Sit Downs, and this week we're joined by Wallaroo Silka Bessie Palu. Bessie, is it true that you didn't play rugby union before the year 2020?
Yes, partially.
So what, were you playing any other sports before you played rugby union?
Yeah, I played netball. Netball was my key sport.
Oh, netball background. And then what made you start the game of rugby?
When I came to Canberra, it was mainly just to pick up like that social life. I had no friends or family moving to Canberra, and so I would know the camaraderie that comes with sport. And so I just joined any football team that was available. Literally, I Googled Canberra women's rugby. Uni North first came up. Old school emailed them, hi, I'm Bessie, I'd like to play, blah, blah. They invited me to a training session, and literally the rest is history.
Well, for the rugby league community listening down in Canberra, you need to do better and do your socials or make sure you promote the game because we're missing out on athletes like Bessie.
Right, this guy is always on my case about and trying to recruit every single player that comes on here to go to rugby league.
They
and
all like, come, mate. They all
they'll come. Eventually come. Just leave us alone for a little bit. You know what I mean? you'll eventually get them. Just relax. Rugby union, go in there, down there, playing a contact sport, only playing netball. What was your experience around like the rules and contact and actually understanding how to play the game?
I don't know if you've seen brown people play netball. It's giving contact and non-contact sport.
Yeah, I have seen it.
I don't think the transition was hard at all. So I thought I was a pretty aggressive person, and so the contact part didn't scare me. You know, at a young age, you probably got quite the discipline, and so the pain threshold's quite high.
And what did you love about the rugby union culture when you joined, you know, your first club?
I don't know if it's the same for league. I can't speak. But, like, rugby union in general just have such a good culture, whatever club you go to. Like, you know what to expect. You know they have, like, a social calendar. You know they enjoy, like, a team bonding after every game. You find definitely common ground with those people. It was just really welcoming. And I was in, like, a uni team, and so you find different levels of skill there. And so you can find your feet there when you get there.
And what about one thing that we always love asking, especially our female athletes when they come on, just the conversations that they have with their parents, or maybe in this case your partner at the time, around playing a contact sport, because now all the stereotypes are starting to be broken. But for yourself, what were those conversations like with your family when you said that you were going to be playing rugby?
I remember the first time I made Brumbies that season. I think it was the 2020 season. We went back to Sydney to spend Christmas. It was that break. And my husband thought, oh, I'm going to have such a proud moment. I'm going to go tell Bessie's dad that she got into the team. And I was like, when he was telling me the story later on in my head, I was like, first, what business do you have to go give my good news to my dad without, you know, telling me? And so we, as he was telling me, and he was like, oh, yeah. And so I was like, oh, dad, guess what? And my dad's like, oh, what? And he goes, oh, she made the Brumbies team, the rugby team. And my dad's response was like, oh, waste of time. What? Why? Why is she playing rugby, you know? And then my husband told me, I said, that's why I said, who told you to go and tell him? And I explained to him, like, and dad was like, it wasn't that he was like old school, but it was really big on, he knew the pathways during that time. It wasn't that big. And unless you're some kind of a superstar, you weren't going to make it. Like, the pathways was just a lot harder. And so dad is just like, oh, you know, you guys probably can be doing better things than that. And now I look back and I have a giggle to my dad. I'm like, oh, is it a waste of time? And he just laughs and walks off. And I'm like, yeah, you need to acknowledge what you said. And so the stubbornness in him, he's like, yeah, yeah, and just walks off. So that piece of, we are breaking that stigma around it, right? But there was that time period where it was just a no-no. Like, you're a wife, you know, you could be doing better things.
Hey, you made your debut in the very, you made the Brumbies in your very first year of playing rugby. And then within 5 years, you're playing for Australia. Not only playing, you've captained your country as well. Let's talk about your debut for the Brumbies. When did you find out? And what was it like telling your family that you're going to be running out there as a Brumbie for the first time?
It was the week of that that game. I remember just messaging. We just have a family chat and just message. Phone calls is like not a thing you really do. You just put it in the family chat and just wait for people's reactions or like hater comments from my siblings because that's just how they express their love. And I remember writing, oh, hey, fam, I'm going to be playing this weekend for the Brumbies. And then like, my dad replies like, oh, yeah, you coming off the bench? Or and I was like, oh, no, like I'm going to be starting. And he's like, oh, very good. He just says very good. And then the next thing is like a piece of advice. Don't close your eyes when you go to tackle. Nice, dad.
Well, he's not wrong. But
and what was his reaction after the game?
He was so proud. Like I think he was just happy with my performance and obviously, I always had something to say after, but it was just like, you know, like, good on you, like, good job. And so I had my, like, my whole family come down and watch that debut. It was here in Canberra. And so, no, it was nice. It's a nice feeling after a game just to go and see them in the crowd.
What about for yourself, you know, moving down to Canberra and then all of a sudden you find yourself representing the Brumbies in your debut when you were out on the field? What were those feelings and thoughts like?
I was, like, really nervous. Like a lot of athletes, like you're probably getting like performance anxiety. Like you're just like, oh, I don't want to mess this up. Like you dream of making highlights and you probably end up being on someone else's highlights.
And so yeah, I've been there. I'm on those highlights plenty of times. Bumped off, stepped.
No, it's like just like a good self-reflection point. Like, hey, you got yourself here. Like you can only give what you've got in that moment. And so that was just that mindset piece, right? And so just go out and enjoy yourself. It was like a debut that I genuinely enjoyed. And so that's nice because now I can reflect back and be like, I actually enjoyed that game. Like I had fun. And we won that game, which was nice.
Oh, it's always nice when you win the debut.
Absolutely.
Did you win yours, Sammy?
I did actually. Beat the Cheetahs over there in Bloemfontein.
I think he's told me 10 times too.
Yeah, it's because the only victory that I remember of few and far between. I love listening you talk about your dad and the reactions and your family reactions. It's so normal in all Pacific cultures around that. And once it does happen, they love you. And oh, not that they didn't love you, but like they love the fact that you're there and they'll represent you. They buy in, they represent. Yeah, that's my daughter, that's my son, whatever. And then it comes down to the point of, you know, the kit and making sure that they ask for all the kit and they want it all. Even your debut jersey, everything. They want it all. Did you get to keep your debut jersey or is dad wearing it around at the fake other clubs?
No, I definitely gave him my debut jersey. But it's so funny with Kit in general. He's like, you know, like I'm a 2XL, like you need to give me 2XL. And I'm like, how do I explain to him? Like, I actually have to wear this kit to train in. And when I'm done with the kit, I can give it. I'm like, it doesn't work that way. I can't just get a 2XL.
I would always ask for two sizes as well. And it was the 2XL. And then everyone look at, you know, the 2XL. I'm like, yeah, it's for mum and dad, or for dad.
Yeah, it was the polo shirt, because I would never wear the polo shirt again. I always asked for the polo shirt as in a 3XL. Yeah, you have this, dad.
Well, Bessie, you know, you've become a leader at your club and you've got to lead your club at the Brumbies. What do you think it is about your personality and some of your traits that led you to become a leader within your club?
I think there's a lot of things that play a part in it, like in my personal life. Like I got oldest child syndrome, like I'm the oldest in my siblings. And so from a very young age, you have a lot of responsibility, like caring roles, like second parent kind of thing. So I already naturally had that. In terms of my workspace, like I'm a youth worker, and so well-being is really important to me, my connections and how I connect with people.
Would it be fair in saying that being a well-being manager and connecting with people also, you've transitioned that into the dressing rooms with your teammates?
100%. It's that connection point, right? Like it's about reading the room. It's about reading others in terms of like, you know, they're probably not having a great day today. So just like words of encouragement during training, just to pick them up as opposed to like really drilling into them, you know? And I don't like that. And a lot of teams that I'm in, they know I'm not the type to like blow up. I'm genuinely quite nice. But when I do blow up, then it's like, oh, something must have really ticked her off. And so just trying to find that balance. And, you know, at the end of the day, like, it's different for everyone. I could gravitate to some than to others. And so, yeah, some days you'll be good, some days probably not.
Yeah, you don't want to waste your bullets firing away for no reason because it falls on deaf ears. So if you're a person like yourself, when you do say something, you want it to make it mean something as well.
Those are the scarier ones.
They're the scarier people, absolutely. What have you learned about professionalism in your 4 years of being a professional athlete that has helped you achieve what you've achieved so far?
So much has changed. So, you know, a lot of Islanders, you normally just submit and you're just like, oh, okay, yes, yep, whatever you say, and you just do. Whereas when you start to grow into that more professionalism, it's understanding, wait, those things aren't okay, and being able to voice it appropriately. And you're not used to voicing things or concerns, whereas now it's like you can challenge. That's the word. You can challenge staff or management about things. And so that's something I learned. So just those cultural barriers are really hard to break down because they're just things that are conditioned to you when you're younger.
We had Alan Alatoa on not long ago, and he spoke about the same thing, making sure that our Pacifica leaders, yeah, break some of those barriers where you'd normally not speak up. Have you had conversations with him being at the same club around leadership and Pacific leadership?
Brumbies have been great. They actually, the women's leadership team and the male leadership team, we actually meet and we speak about how we run our groups, how do they run their groups, and just we try and pick off each other like, oh, maybe that might work with us. But we understand that male and female cohorts are very different and we function differently. So we have that part, but we haven't actually touched specifically on like Pacifica, but I do remember listening to his and, you know, I can attest to that. I definitely agree. I think that we definitely have natural Islander leaders, and I think it comes from, you know, your upbringing and the standards that you live by, and we need to change those cultural barriers of just being submissive and just like, oh, yeah, okay, and actually put your hand up and initiate things and movements, because I think, and I'm not trying to be biased in any way, but we are clever people. Like when you're switched on and you know what you're talking about, you get on a roll. But I think it's just that confidence that we lack to, you know, to bring ourselves out to do that. And so it might just need a bit of those gentle promptings from us Islanders in that leadership role to kind of promote that, because I'd love to see more of us in that space, because I definitely think we have a lot more to give.
Yeah, plenty more, I believe so. And yeah, you mentioned us being clever. Our ancestors travelled the world through a boat following stars, and yep. You know, they had to lead the way, and you know, it's within our blood that, you know, we are great leaders. So I totally agree with you. Yeah, you know, I think we create those platforms to bring out our leaders, our young leaders. Now, you're currently at work. How do you juggle both footy and your role as wellbeing and welfare at school?
Youth worker.
Youth worker. Mm-hmm. Youth worker at school. Sorry, yeah.
First of all, you've got to have a really good employer. So, like, Arendelle College is so supportive of me and my, you know, my sporting aspirations. We're so lucky we actually have a sports academy here at school, just like Matraville, Endeavour, Hills there in New South Wales. The balance is, it's not easy. And I'll be honest, like, this year rugby has taken the front seat. Whatever camps or tours needed, school were very supportive of me and they put me through. And their reason being, and I'm really grateful, is that the window for women to play elite sport is quite small. And I think it's really important to take all those opportunities while you can, because once I miss that time frame, it's really hard to come back. And so they're very supportive of that. But at the moment, we're just not in the capacity in that sporting arena to be able to be full time. And so I still have a life outside of this. I still need to be well supported, and hence why the full-time job is still there.
Oh, beautiful. You're not wrong about saying you need a good employer, getting that balance right so you can have that time off work to go represent your country. Oh, you're listening to Sam and T's Summer Sit-Downs, and this week we're joined by reigning Best Super W Player of the Year, Seal Kopesi Balu. We've talked about playing for the Brumbies. Now let's move into playing for the Wallaroos, making your debut against the Black Ferns. What was that like, running out there and knowing that you're making your debut and playing against one of the best teams in the world?
It is a memory that I definitely will never forget. My first camp was the beginning of that year, and I just think of like my journey from Jan to August to my debut, and it was full on. I was in every camp, in non-selection training days, and they were like the hardest days. Like, you talk to any Wallaroo at the moment, they'll always talk about me and my journey, and it was really tough. And I remember after every non-selection, I'd be there like, oh, I swear I'm giving my all. Like, come on, surely. Like, why is this happening? And just constantly defeated. And then when the opportunity came, it was such a chaotic moment. And so on the Thursday, I got a bit of a head knock at training, and then I had to do a few HIAs before the actual game. And so, well, not the Thursday, the Tuesday, sorry. And selections were being held off until I did my HIA, and I didn't know anything of it. Like, I didn't think anything of it. I eventually passed my HIA, and we went through to team selections, and I had this feeling like, oh, wait, I think I might have an opportunity here, because I didn't get a non-selection call. So I remember sitting there, and like, the position I was wanted to play at the moment at that time was number 12. And so it like goes through the numbers, and as like it got to 9, I was like, my palms were sweaty, and I was just like, okay, just waiting for it. And as soon as 12 came on, like, I saw my name pop up, and I was like so emotionally overwhelmed. Like, it was such a proud moment for me, and it lasted probably a good solid 2 seconds. Like, my whole team got around me, and I was like, oh no. Like I said, I just sacked myself in that time. I was like, this whole like 8 months of prepping, I'm here, like, I have to play, I should be playing. And then the moment came, I was like, can I have a moment? And I looked back, and it was just the lead up of selection was a lot and really overwhelming. But the actual debut was probably one of the most enjoyable moments for me. I remember the New Zealand national anthem was playing, and it was a very emotional moment because, like I said, I was born in New Zealand, raised there for probably the first early years of my life. And I remember looking in the crowd, and I could spot my mum, and she was just singing the New Zealand national anthem, and she was in like, I'm getting emotional, sorry. She was just like crying, and she was just so proud. She's like, we grew up thinking that we'd play for New Zealand once upon a time, right? But here I am in the green and gold jersey representing a whole different side. And so I remember looking at the crowd, and she was just crying and singing and just crying of just being so proud. And so I guess that was just a bit of like just what I needed to go into this game. Like, I've already made my parents so proud. Like, wow. Just that, I just won right then and there.
You're already a winner before kickoff, and I feel like you just took us on a roller coaster. Like, the excitement, the nerves, the emotions. Man, that would have been a crazy week. Quickly, was your parents wearing a green and gold jersey or a black jersey?
They had no choice. They had to wear green and gold. And they'll only wear it if it was me that bought it for them.
So Mum was wearing the green and gold jersey singing the New Zealand anthem. What a special moment. And you know, when you found, when the number 12 came up and you found out, who was the first person that you told and what was their reaction?
I called my husband first and he was just so stoked. Like he knew, and I shared with him like the hardship that I had throughout all those non-selection tours to get there. And he's like my dad in some parts. Like they just keep you humble like real quickly. And, you know, he's like, you know, the moment comes, like you might think it's right for you, but just the stars will align when it's ready for you. And I'm like, yeah, I don't want to hear this. I want to hear you deserve to be there, but like they really do keep us grounded. And it was good. And so it was a really positive phone call.
All the, those emotions were, yeah, feeling of joy and excitement after the anthem. Now you're lining up against the haka over there. Was that the first time you've experienced facing a haka or sipita or sivata or anything like that?
It was my very first time. And it was such a special moment. I think anyone that will say that they're like, they oppose a haka like that, like it's so special and can be overwhelming. I remember looking at it, I'm like, oh, what do I look at? Like, I don't know what people's thoughts processes are during it, but you're like, you look at them and they're so fearless. And I'm like, oh, no. Nah. Then you look at someone else and they're staring at you. You're like, oh, no. Nah. And you look around and it eventually got to a point where I was like, oh, yeah, like you start to ride this ego ride with them, you know, and so you start to give it back to them. And so I just remember getting fueled with like anger, like, no, like I want this. Like, and I just remember just staring them down. I was like, oh, yeah, I don't have a haka for you, but I'll stare battle you. Yeah. So that was like my thought at that moment.
I was going to ask you, who did you stare at? Because again, even remember when we faced the Sivatal once, with the force, man, I just tried to find a halfback to have a stare at and just look at that person. But did you stare out the biggest player there when you scanned the team?
I locked eyes. Her name's Joanna. She was the lock at that time in that game and she was quite tall. And she was like had like those real fearless poo kind of eyes. And I was like, oh, yep. So then you try to turn to the smaller girls. I think the smaller girls were even worse. And I was like, oh, yep, I might just stare into blank space for now.
It would have been a huge honour to wear the green and gold jersey. When you wear that jersey, you know, you've had 16 caps since that moment. Who do you represent when you, you know, represent the Wallaroos?
First and foremost, like I represent me. Only I put on that jersey and whatever I do in that jersey is my doings. And so I want to leave a legacy behind, right? But I want it to reflect who I am as a person, both on the field as a player and how I carry myself on and off the field. And so like when I represent myself, it's a reflective of my family and friends already. It's like the people who raised me. And I want people to look at that and be like, no, she has been raised by good parents. Like I always got to credit them. And then second, it's like your country. Like I want to represent my people. You know, we speak about like Tongan Samoan descent, New Zealand born, but I think it's really important to acknowledge Australia is a country that has provided me and my family opportunity and a life and comfort in a way. And so I've got to acknowledge that piece. And that's why I call myself Australian now, is that I don't know where I'd be if I was back in New Zealand or if my parents never migrated here. I know for sure I probably wouldn't be here. And so just acknowledging that piece.
I think we can both say the same, eh, Sammy?
Absolutely. What's something common that your mum or dad always say to you, you know, while you're on this journey of success? What's something that they always remind you of and keep you grounded that always rings true with yourself?
I always want to say something really inspirational, but my parents really keep me humble. I'll probably have the best game of my life and then I'll get a phone call after my game and I'll let it ring and then make the phone call after that even worse for me. And just to take note, like Balul is my dad's surname. Like I don't play with my actual married last name. My married last name is Sekona. But that's my way of acknowledging my dad and my tongue and heritage. And so that already is a, like a proud moment for my dad and I want to be able to put his name in a good books at the moment. And so they're proud already in that sense that I genuinely want to represent them and my family. But they always keep me humble. They never boastful about it. I don't know. We just don't really talk about rugby in general, like, unless the moment comes. So they're not the type to probably wear Wallaroos or Wallabies kit anywhere. They'll just be your average people. But, yeah, just a bit of humility. It's good.
Yeah, nice.
What about touring with the girls? A lot of Pacifica players now playing for the Brumbies and now the Wallaroos. What's it actually like touring with Sarah? Is it a joy? Is it annoying? Nagama. And my cousin Alana Sikamithi. What is
now,
it?
Let's
like?
Start with Sarah first.
Oh, Sarah first. Yeah,
let's throw some shade at Sarah.
Me and Sarah have such a good relationship, and it's like a sister relationship. Like, I can say things that could be so out the gate and she can just cop it, and it's really good. But Sarah's really good. She's just not good when you go to coffee. She'll say she forgot her card and then you have to pay for coffee. And then even worse, she'll invite other people to come.
You know what? I'm glad she got you a beauty too, because her wallet is never here when I'm around.
We were having this argument with her last week.
Wouldn't shout if a shark did it.
That's it.
T-Rex arms. They don't go towards her pockets. They're just up here like fighting. So, but she is a blast to be around. And just on that, when you have those girls that you connect with on a, like, you've got a professional game and you're trying to get high performance, but you also have the off-field stuff, knowing how far the women's game has gone, and you get to have these moments traveling around the world and connecting with players like Sarah, how does that make you feel when you look at what it is now and where it's going to get to in the future?
You've got to be professional until you are professional, right? Like, and it's really hard to drive those standards, because, like, there's some parts of us, like, we just want to reap the rewards of it. Like, we want it right here, right now. But we're just in that phase where we just have to, it's teething up. We just have to ride that wave. And the reality is, we might be lucky and benefit from it, or we may be unlucky, but the next generation would definitely benefit from it. And so it's got to sit with you. And I think it's a personal thing. And it's like, we may not reap the rewards now, but the game is changing. And, oh God, like, I speak about it all the time, but the younger girls coming through, they are absolutely unreal. There's so much talent. The athleticism in them is beyond us. And so the game's just going to grow. Like, we think that this is good footy and we're about to produce it. I don't know, like, next 2-3 years, it'll be even better.
Well, Percy, we're going to start wrapping it up. I feel like we've learned so much from your experiences and your journey, but we've got one more question each, just a bit of fun. My one is, you're heading toward your last meal, you've got the Samoan meal or you got the Tongan meal, and you can only choose one. Which one are you going to and why?
Okay, my last meal will go to Tonga, because I love Lucy Bia Manioke.
There it is.
Okay. I love that answer. And that's all we've got time for. No, we've got one more. Out of Faitala Moleka, Sarah Nagama, and Alana Sikamithi, who would you least likely want to be stuck on an island with, just you two alone?
I feel so bad saying this. Sarah Nagama. For sure. She'll just chew my ear off. She'll be on the yappers complaining about how we're stuck there and we'll have no solutions whatsoever.
Yeah, she's full of problems, eh? No solutions.
Sounds like that Pacific Sports show.
But, hey, Bessie, it's been an absolute pleasure to be able to sit with you and just go through, right through from family, footy, bit of fun, and just seeing, you know, the person who you are today and the legacy that you're going to leave behind for a lot of our Pacifica talent. So we really appreciate that.
Thanks, Bessie. We appreciate you for jumping on. It's been an absolute honour.
Thank you for having me. And a shout out to this platform that you have. Such a great way to reach out to us Pacificas. So shout out to you too.